What is up, everyone? This is Press X to Start Podcast Season 5, Episode 18. Here at Press X, we transform the video game media landscape through an underserved and protective point of view. Restorative justice for the underrepresented programmers, developers, and consumers, and also my sleep. I am your host today, DJ, aka Sleepy Bags, aka... Okay, so I'm not going to say sexy bad choices because I feel like as a dad, I can't really say sexy bad choices because that don't really work anymore. So
until you're ready for that second baby.
True, true. And that would be a sexy bad choice, aka sexy bad choices. Because let me tell you, one baby is enough. aka, did you know? Okay, this is a survey coming from YouGov of America. So YouGov.com. There was a survey released about what animal humans think that they could beat in a fight. And then it was also
mono
broken down.
Mono.
Yes. And it was broken down between men and women. And based off this survey, women is a lot more realistic than men. Okay, so we have, I'm just going to jump to the more extreme cases. We have a king cobra. 23% of men think that they could beat a king cobra, and only 8% of women think they can beat a king cobra.
Mm-hmm.
Mind you, this is a unarmed fight.
Yeah.
So you
with
are
your fists.
Yeah, you are in your birthday suit fighting a king cobra.
Now they said when, so it could technically, I guess, limp off, but I guess one out of four men think, you know what, that cobra, we can drop kick it in the face.
Yeah, like they forget that cobra's bites are like not lightning fast, but faster than our reflexes.
But which animal does everybody agree on they can take on?
It looks the same that people really think that they can take on a rat. but that's loosely. We have 76% of men think they could take on a rat, and 68% of women think they can take on a rat.
Mm-hmm. I love how everybody want to kill a goose. That's just my favorite one. I think it's about like, I guess almost in the high 80s that everybody think they can take on a goose, but not humans.
Yeah.
So a lot of people don't think they can take on another person, but they can take on a rat and a goose.
Yeah, it's weird. Someone explained to me that, I know this is still an AKA, but let me just, one last thing. Someone said to me that if you think about it, the duck is the king of all animals because the duck has mastered land, has mastered sea, and mastered air. And I was like, yeah, you're right. You're right. Ducks are king. So, aka Donald Duck, let's go.
Oh, Lord. So, I am, as declaring an open session of the District Court of Maryland, sitting in the great city of Baltimore, I am the exuberant barrister of Baltimore.
All right. Marcus, put some claps behind that.
No. No, I don't think I will.
I am Jordan, a.k.a. JXBot, a.k.a. the President of the United Federations of Earth. You'll get that in a second. And Dodgeball Champion of Knockout City.
Hey, all right.
Teach some kids a lesson.
Jordan, pull up at an elementary school dodgeball game. Let's go.
I was actually very good at dodgeball when I was a kid. I was so skinny. I was so tiny. I was a very skinny child, and no one could hit me.
You're aerodynamic.
Did any of you ever play something called Greek dodgeball?
Nope.
Where you had a dodgeball from both sides?
Well, yeah, yes. Actually, I didn't know it was called that, though, but I've been in that situation.
Yeah, I never knew that was, yeah.
In Hamilton, we called it Greek dodgeball.
Oh, okay. Yeah, at a summer camp that I was in. Same summer camp where I learned how to dominate and connect four. Different story. Oh. But yeah, we played dodgeball like that, where it was, you had the people throw the ball ahead of you, and then if you dodge, you turn around and watch out for people behind you.
Were you always tall, even at that time?
No. At that time, I was, because that was like middle school. So I was getting tall, but I wasn't like tall.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't start growing until middle school.
Mm-hmm.
Man.
But yeah, fun times. Speaking of fun times, let us move on with the show. Oh, actually, before we do that, we have some housekeeping. So, first up, we all been, you know, aware of what's been going on in Palestine, and we decided that it would be a good idea for us to do a charity drive. So, if you go to pressxnumber2start.com/Palestine, you will see that we set up a donations page. Of course, we're not taking any of the money. All this money is going to the Child Relief Fund. So, you know, support if you can. We would love to, you know, have everyone support and do this. We're going to be doing it ourselves. So, yeah, you know, support, please. Next up, our E3 schedule. So, as it is right now, we don't know exactly when any of the showcases will be taking place. But the plan is to have our next podcast be the E3 predictions cast. And then the overall goal, and we should be able to hit this, is that all of our E3 content will be both audio and video. So make sure you subscribe and hit that notification bell so you can see all the video stuff on our YouTube channel at pressxnumber2start.com/YouTube. On top of that, the next or the big goal is to have our actual podcast live stream on our YouTube channel. So definitely make sure you subscribe so you can check our stuff live. Now, with that being said, we can talk about what we've been playing.
What you been playing, DJ?
Ah, Child Duties. That's what I've been playing.
Ooh.
Literal duty.
Are you trying to plan them it?
No. No, it changes every time. It's
a roguelike game. It's,
yeah, right? Yes.
Every start time you over, fail, you got to start over. Right. And over.
Oh, let me tell you, when you fail, it's not fun. It's a cleanup.
Well, in the same vein of that conversation, when would it be considered a platinum achievement with your child? Like, is it them moving out and going to college? Or, I mean, it's up to you. You're the parent.
Mm-hmm. I consider a platinum achievement when when I can get London to say Kamehameha.
That is a low bar, because I believe she may say it on accident while sneezing at the age of two.
Hey, easy platinum right there.
Easy platinum.
Make sure you get a photo of it, you know.
Right.
Or the live stream clip.
Easy platinum.
Does Shireen know that she's playing a game too?
Not yet.
Is this a co-op?
Right. It's a battle royale.
Outside of Child Duties, what have you been playing, DJ?
So I've been playing a couple of different things. First up, I also been playing Knockout City. So this weekend, by the time you listener/viewer hear or see this, the weekend's going to be over. Of course, you can play Knockout City for free. So I've been playing that. I also am a Knockout City champion. I really had a lot of fun with that game, and I like it's. The gameplay is very much so like rock, paper, scissors in a way, where you throw the ball, you can dodge, you can catch, of course, and you can also feint. And it took me like halfway through the first round, because it's broken in 3 rounds per game. So it took me halfway through the first round to realize, oh, the feinting is kind of where it's at. And if you have a ball, you get up close to somebody and you feint, that's going to make them try to catch. And then the catch only works for a certain period of time. Mm-hmm. And then you can just hit them with the ball. So I was kind of doing that a lot. And it felt very much so like Gundam, funny enough. Because
found a way to say Gundam.
Now, this fainting mechanic, is that the charge? Or what was?
No, it's not the charge. So the one thing that I take issue with Knockout City is... the tutorial doesn't, you really have to sit and play through all of the tutorial to figure out like the different stuff, because you can also spin and you can also like,
I've seen a few spins online, and the double jump is dedicated to two buttons. It's like A then Y. That's what I've noticed for a double jump.
Yeah. But like, you can still get hit if you're spinning or like pirouetting. So I don't know exactly what that's
you
for.
Can pirouette.
Yeah.
Yay.
I think it might just be for style.
Exactly. But, like in middle school. Exactly. Yes. No real purpose, but it was fun.
But yeah, so like the fainting, yeah, Jordan, like that is separate from the charge. Mm-hmm. And it's super powerful. I don't know if they're gonna be looking to balance that, because
so you just fall on the ground, you can't be hit by a ball?
No, I'm sorry. It's feinting to throw. So it's like you fake a throw.
Oh, a fake.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah. I think it's on PlayStation 5, it's like R3 or L3. I think it's R3. But yeah, it's really powerful because
thank you for the tip.
Yeah, because you faint, and the minute you see someone put their hands out, then you just throw the ball, and like they can't do anything. I think you might be able to dash out of a catch, so that might be a way of countering it. But I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, you can dash depending on what angle you catch the ball at.
Okay, but yeah, so Knockout City, it's great. I will continue playing it. I might actually just buy it, and I really think this is a very, because it's I think it's $20 or something like that.
Whole $20.
But I really like this whole block party system that they got, where you can play the game for free for a little bit, and then if you like it, you can continue, you just buy it. I wish Returnal did that, because I'd be able to play the game to know if I liked it.
Oh, no. You better put up $70 and, figure out if I like a game or not.
Make that investment.
Right. But beyond Knockout City, I have been playing No Man's Skies, specifically their Expeditions.
Yeah, so, I saw you playing that on the PS5. Cool skin designs, I must say.
Yes. So, they actually just released a trailer showing their integration with Mass Effect, so you can actually get the Normandy ship as one of your frigates in the game, completing this latest Expeditions. Expeditions are essentially their community quest line. So you jump into a separate game from your single player game, and it's essentially, if you want to call it open world, you basically exist in a universe with like everyone else that's playing the same expedition, and you do a bunch of tasks to essentially, you get rewards from checking stuff off, and then once you finish it, you get a overarching reward that you can bring back into your single player game.
Oh, it's a good incentive.
Yeah, exactly. Like the first expedition, because I completely just didn't know about any of this. The first expedition, you get a golden spaceship that looks pretty dope.
It sounds dope.
So I was kind of I was kind of upset that I missed that. After No Man's Sky, I actually played a little bit of Wreckfest, Jordan.
What do you think about it?
It was interesting. I thought it was going to be more arcadey than what it was. It strikes a balance between like almost like Hot Wheels and Forza.
It's dirt. It's what Dirt 5 should have been. It's what the original Dirt were.
Yeah.
Like that arcade simulation.
Yeah. Right.
So, will you say that it's banking on nostalgia?
No, it's kind of its own thing.
It's definitely its own thing. Like, it's fun. It's fun. I think my only gripe that I had was like, that wasn't the gripe, because I just changed the tuning of the car and I was fine with the like drifting and controls and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a fun game. It's free for if you have PS Plus, so I would definitely recommend it, you know. Ain't got nothing to lose except time.
Which you have plenty of.
Yeah, I have plenty of it when I'm not sleeping.
You know, that game was made by THQ. I believe that game was named by THQ Nordic also. The Wreckfest.
Oh. Mm-hmm. Oh, that and Biomutant is another one of those THQ Nordic games.
Yeah.
The last game that I continue to play is New Pokemon Snap. This game feels a lot like Animal Crossing, where it is a pick up and play experience, and you play for about 20 minutes and you put it down, pick it up, you know, maybe 2 or 3 hours, play another for 20 minutes. Yeah. So I'm having fun with this game. As you level up through the game, the environments that you are trekking through changes, and Pokemon, you know, sometimes they appear in different places. They're doing different things. They might be sleeping. They might be fighting each other, and then you also have items that you can use to interact with the Pokemon to make them do different things. So it's an enjoyable experience. I'm still having fun. It's Pokemon Snap. I knew what I was getting myself into, so I don't really have any complaints with it.
You're a good addict.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So that's been pretty much what I've been playing.
I've been playing also Knockout City. I was literally playing it this morning, and it feels like I'm playing against younger people. I don't know. It's just like
What makes you say that? What makes you feel like this is a younger crowd?
Every game I've been in, I've won and was the MVP. And I'm just
You can't just accept the fact that you're just good. No, don't humble yourself to these youngins.
Like, no, like it's I'm just like it's don't know. It's like this game would be way more fun if I played with people. You know, like I think this game's a very fun team game to which there's communications. But at the same time, you know, like people, you know, this is a very short period of time for me to determine whether I'm good at this game. Because there are games to which I started off good as, but as time progressed and the player pool kind of narrowed to those that took it more seriously and you keep going up in rank, then you truly find out if you're good.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, just people just don't know what the fuck they're doing. I don't know if they like skip their tutorial or something. It's a very
But that's like all multiplayer. You know, you gotta squash these noobs. It's how they get better. You're helping out the community. That think of it that way.
Funny thing about it, I was getting like random invites from people that I beat. Like, hey, you want to join up? I'm like, no.
Can't beat them.
Teach me.
No. I don't teach. You learn through punishment.
Senpai.
But it's a very colorful game. Like, you know, deriving.
How you like the character creator?
They were like, fuck it. You know, whatever voice you want, whatever body type you want, because like they're not going heavy with whether a body is male or female. You could have the case to which you have more masculine body types, more feminine body types, but then you can have a masculine voice and feminine voice. And, you know, like there's a lot of liberty to this character creator, which I hope other companies will follow. Just kind of have at it, you know. We don't have to have, like, the binary that's, you know, been a part of the character creation system to this day, to be honest. Even the most recent high-end games are, like, male or female pilots, you know, and
right
from there, and then you have
there's less constraints with their character creators. Just make a character.
But yeah, character designs are cool, you know, like very, very derived heavily from Fortnite. And yeah, I'll see how long I play this game. I got it through Game Pass, so
because
remember, Game Pass is this game was published by EA and it's on EA Play. So yeah, I didn't have to pay anything for it, seeing that I'd imagine this game will stay on EA Play. And as long as the Game Pass Xbox EA partnership remains strong, then, you know, I'd have access to it for a pretty long period of time without having to pay full price. But other than that, it's a game I would recommend, you know, trying out during this 10-day period.
Yeah.
The other game I'm playing is a game I've been trying to get into for a long period of time because I also enjoy strategy games, you know, like SimCity and City Skylines, Civilization, all those games. Any game that involves resource management and strategy, I'm for. And the game I'm playing is Stellaris, which is essentially the Galaxy version. It's made by the same people that did XCOM and Civilization, Treyarch. And yeah, this is, you know, basically you're starting off as a civilization trying to colonize the galaxy, making partnerships with other factions, trade deals, but also
Jordan, that means that you're now a colonizer.
You know what? And I'll get into that in 1 second, because the traits you pick for your species can have positive or negative effects depending on what you choose in terms of how much sprawl your empire has. Some empires are fairly xenophobic. Some empires are more conducive for other alien life. Some do not like going outside their system. Some are isolationists. But my empire, it was like my first playthrough. I chose humans, like the United Nations of Earth or whatever.
You're the Barack Obama of this new cohort. I appreciate it.
Like, picking them was a pretty easy starter race, quote unquote, because like they were for expansion and also like they weren't afraid of conflict. But
yeah, the humans have a history of that.
Yeah.
But there are quote unquote fallen empires, or empires that are not meant to be fucked with. Like basically, I was next door to a military isolationist. They were not interested in packs. They were not interested in sharing technologies. They're like, what you got to trade? They're like, don't talk to me.
They're North Korea. That's what they are.
Well, yeah, they were kind of, they were.
You do you, we do us, and, you know.
But actually being able to trade, you know, because North Korea can't trade. But like, the only thing that they were focused on was, you know, trading. But do not settle near their shit. And I didn't read the fine print because I was I sent one of my envoys over there to decipher their language, and I didn't
like a human. So walking up in there, I'm friends, y'all.
I did not read the text of it, and what I did was sent one of my construction ships over there, and I set up an outpost, and I started surveying, started extracting minerals. They're like, hey, what did we just say? You have we're gonna make one motherfucking request,
just one.
And you know what, this was a point in the game to which my military was like getting kind of good. I was able to like get some victories and shit. I was feeling myself. Mm-hmm. Like, you know what, mm-hmm. I basically selected the option like fuck you, fuck your boat, fuck your mama, fuck everything about you, we don't care, we do what we want. They're like, bet.
Like a floating middle finger just went out in space.
Literally one day later, like, because like in galactic time it's like by months and year, literally like one second later, like one day, declared war. I'm like, all right, so I move like my biggest fleets to their borders, you know what I mean, like, let's do this, dude. I saw the biggest stack. They had cruisers. They had battleships. I only have frigates. I only have one destroyer. I was like, yo, I got destroyers now. These motherfuckers got battleships, which can single-handedly wipe out my entire fleet. I'm like, all right,
just what?
Delete that save. I started that shit over. So the thing about these strategy games, usually it takes me a couple playthroughs to get a understand what the fuck's going on.
Also on the PS. How are you playing this?
I'm playing it like this is through Game Pass on PC.
Okay.
So lesson learned. So we'll see how this other I like modified my whole game through. Like all the other civilizations are mad weaker than me.
Jordan's like never again. Next slider, never again.
But that's what I've been playing.
My goodness. Awesome. So I don't have nearly as much adventure because I do my stand-ups, which is Overwatch, which we'll talk more about later on, and Dead by Daylight, which the only thing new is brought me a lot closer to my brother. He lives in North Carolina, and this has been like the one thing that like we've communicated so much over the past week, much more than the many years of our lives.
That's awesome.
And so instead of doing the show notes early like I should have been doing, we were playing Dead by Daylight till like 1:30 in the morning. And especially because I'm a sucker for a good skin. And as of right now, they are doing their What a Front Massacre collection. So a couple of my favorite characters, Dwight and David, are like looking awesome. Like Dwight got this bloodied Hawaiian shirt with a lei and some shorts, because normally it's like most Dead by Daylight characters have school clothes, like fall and winter collection, and here's one of the few times they actually have shorts. And unfortunately for my one character, he's barefoot, so he only got no shoes.
Yikes.
David, he is a lifeguard model, so he has the model outfit, which you can switch on and off so you can be shirtless. So yeah, I'm just like stunning in this amazing gear, getting slaughtered by all the different killers. If I'm gonna die, I'm gonna die pretty. That's all I'm saying.
Rules to live by.
Exactly. The other thing that I started during the last cast and I have it now completed is Jason Schreier's book, Press Reset. I finished it. It is a really well-written book.
Really?
I typically like nonfiction literature from journalists because they know how to write succinctly. Now, the premise of the book is looking at how the industry go through its boom and bust cycles and the human costs of it. And they focus on some pretty big developers, looking at some of the developers or studios who are under EA, as well as THQ, Studio 38 Studios, and big huge games, which is based in Baltimore. Even in the after, we have a little piece of Telltale Games, and look at how this is a highly unstable industry.
Absolutely,
yeah, that's agreed.
And it makes me wonder, why do people do this? Like, I know people love it, it's a great exercise of digital creativity, but there's a balance between being able to create what you want, express what you want. This book's focus a lot heavier on the MMORPG genre for the most part.
Yeah.
Especially looking at how a lot of studios take these beloved games from the 80s and early 90s and trying to revamp them to today. Even looking at BioShock and BioShock Infinite and how you have, I think is that Visceral? We have a studio that made a great game and then they quickly dissolved it. But there's some very familiar themes I've seen in other industries. Like, for example, you have the opportunity where I say some people are able to fail upwards. So you have personalities who have maybe have had great success developing a big game back in the day. Like, I think they look like Ken Levine. But he's a terrible leader. He burns people out. He never works within a budget. But people remember how he made games yesterday. And so they keep giving him products saying, you know, he's such a good guy. But it's like, he's a good individual, not a good person to work with. Like, he makes people spend weeks developing something and then craps on it and said, let's do it over again, which costs money, which means that when a game doesn't perform so well and yet they spent so much money, the one of the quickest solutions is just to shut down a studio. And so you have this system.
BioShock, developers, Irrational Games.
Irrational, thank you.
Yeah.
So who did Visceral? I'm sorry. A lot of the stories here blend. I read it so quickly. But yeah, there's not a lot of loyalty.
Yeah.
You can't, because you never know when your job may be taken away.
Exactly.
Networking is huge. A lot of people find that next job because of who they work with previously, or they have great friends that know one another, help one another out. It ends with a call for unionization. Because Jason Schreier talked about how in his line of work, he was in a unionized workforce where even though it was bought out between different publishers, they're able to maintain their benefits, maintain comparable service packages. And it seemed like there is a lot of people said, yes, we should unionize, but there's still not a lot into building the process or starting the process of having unionization. And would this be a unionized studio, or would you have some kind of like a guild that protects like an entire profession? That is still in the works. But there's for a lot of folks, like, I don't want to have to drop everything, move to Boston, work for 2 years, get laid off, drop everything, go to California, that closed down, move to Toronto. Like, it's a highly unstable lifestyle, and maybe a union will help put the brakes on it.
Right.
They also talk about the rise of contractor-based firms, where instead of being dedicated to one creative director or being to one game, you're just there to do maybe cool graphics, cool lighting, awesome fighting styles, and that's all you do. So instead of being dedicated to one game, you could do multiple games, and you're doing...
Is that akin to like a production studio for like movies, where they do the one thing, they do the one movie, and then they like wrap and they move on to the next movie? Or is that different?
I would say, let's look at animation. Aaron Magruder will write his stuff in LA or Maryland for the Boondock, but it's going to be shipped to South Korea to be drawn and put the graphics on and make it actually work. So you have a division between the creatives who create the product and the different studio houses that will do certain sections of the work. And one thing that makes it more efficient is that if a creative say, I want to have this type of boss fight, the contractor say, okay, great, we'll make that boss fight, and it's going to take this many hours, and it's going to cost this much. And people are like, oh, you know, maybe I won't do that whim. I'll rescale it back.
Yeah.
Whereas if you have a whim and you have a liable worker, you can give them the work. You don't really care about the number of hours because you already have the staff there. But then if you don't like it, you scrap it. Well, you just wasted, you know, a couple weeks or months of work.
Exactly.
Isn't that what happened with the Halo story? That one worker that was in a Chinese firm on the Halo Infinite project was talking about how there's cut content and a pretty aggressive work environment is what he said. Of course, he, you know, retracted that for work reasons, you know, for career reasons. But that's interesting that it's still probably going on today.
Yeah.
Well, and there's pros and cons with that, because if you're relying on all these contractor studios to do your work, you're dealing with workplaces all around the world. So you can't just have a spur of the moment meeting on something. You got to arrange a conference call across multiple time zones. The one thing that Jason doesn't talk about in the book, which I saw that as, I don't know, as a black reader, is that he doesn't talk about, I don't think the industry would get away with doing some of the things that it does if they had more women and if they had more people of color.
Hmm.
Because one of the things he often describes is that it's like a frat house culture.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In a lot of these places.
Mm-hmm.
And if you fit in, it's great.
Well, that's representative of the tech industry itself. The tech industry is very much white male dominated.
Yeah. I also feel like that is something that is slowly changing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's one of those things where right now, yes, it definitely is a predominantly white man job that you do as a game designer. But like, hopefully this trend will continue. And by in the next like 5 years or so, we will see more diverse faces when the studios do their company photos and such.
Well, luckily, both Xbox and PlayStation made a commitment to diversify the workforces.
Yeah, but I want to know, like, who's the black Ken Levine?
We don't.
There's that guy from, you know, CD Projekt Red. But it's like,
I was actually thinking of him, too.
Mike Pondsmith.
Pondsmith, right?
Yeah.
But, like, that's not the case, because he only did Cyberpunk. Like, he created the original Cyberpunk game, but, like, mm-hmm. he hasn't created any other game.
And that's why it's, like, it's not just having to work. I mean, you need people who are able to start from the bottom to work their way up, understandably, build experience and know-how and opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
But to me, it's you don't have different type of voices to say, hey, you know what? Maybe we shouldn't spend 2 weeks doing something we all know is going to fail.
Yeah.
Or maybe we shouldn't take a beloved game. I think this is the Enter the Gungeon tale, or is it the there was a mobile game that was Dungeon Keeper, which was pretty much a knockoff of Clash of Clans, where everybody said, this is gonna be a terrible game. But EA was like, we need to make a game that we can charge money on.
Yeah.
And it has to be a mobile game. And they're like, this is gonna be crap. And it kept going on until when they released it, it was crap. And then EA's decision was, you know, since this was crap, time for us to close down the studio. Like,
you told you this was crap. You're fired, by the way. It's like, what?
Yeah. And that's the thing. Video games take a long time to make, but the publishers want short-term profits.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're willing to take what's hot right now, implement a game that people won't really get to play till several years later when that's no longer what's hot.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a vicious cycle because the video game industry is, I guess you can, all similar with the movie industry, but I'd say more so with the game industry, is that it's the main industry where you have such a expectation for visual fidelity and just creativity, but then on the flip side, it has to turn a profit.
Mm-hmm.
So we run into issues like, where it's like, yeah, you know, maybe they're having a cool boss fight would be really cool and it would increase the you know, the quality of the game. But then it's just like, all right, that's going to take us 3 weeks to do and we don't have any graphics or assets for it. So we're going to have to create that. And then, you know, they do it and it's just like, this isn't what I thought it would be. And now we're like over budget. So what do we do?
Yeah. So now, DJ, you used to work in the game industry, but no longer. You got to
I did testing, QA testing.
So why didn't you want to stay, work your way up, become a developer, a designer, and why aren't you raising your baby in San Francisco?
This answer is very short. It's very simple. The answer is it wasn't for me. Like, the lifestyle wasn't for me. Like, when I was doing testing at Bethesda, some of my friends are still there. Like, one of my friends in particular, she's actually a QA lead now. She was also doing testing with me at the time. But, you know, it's one of those things where you generally, I guess for QAs, you know, you enter by contract based and it is very much so, you know, every 6 months, hopefully your contract renews. If it doesn't, then you kind of just have to wait another 6 months to hopefully get brought back or what. So like for me, that happened once where I got let go. But then in another 6 or 8 months or something like that, I was able to come back again. So, but yeah, it's just, there's no security in that job unless you are like a lead, unless you are a manager, unless you're like a higher up position. So, you know, looking at that and, you know, at the time was just like, this isn't, I need something that's more stable just so I can bring money in, you know? So it was that on top of the whole idea of, yeah, you know, if this doesn't go the way I want it, you might have to just pick up your house and move across the U.S. And it's just like, nah, I don't want to do any of that. So that actually made me, you know, go into developing for my own. So like at a time I was trying to build a mobile, I was building a couple of mobile games and so on and so forth. But like that ended up being something that I was more passionate about than actually working for a studio in itself. So
yeah. All right. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you for sharing.
But yeah, it's a job for certain people. I appreciate those who are working in that job because it is tough and they make great stuff. And I play that stuff, so, you know, kind of don't want them to stop doing that.
Just do it in a more humane fashion. That's all
we're asking. Exactly. Less cow prods. With that being said, that has been what we've been playing / reading. As Marcus would say, before we jump to the quick hits, we have a word from our sponsors.
Hey there, enjoying the episode? Want to hear more? Then we're going to need your help. If you haven't already, please subscribe to our show. And if you have subscribed, great. Spread the word. Tell everybody. To follow us on social media, check us out on Facebook and Instagram at PressX2Start, Twitter at PressX2S, and YouTube now at PressX2StartTV. And if you've done all of this already, well done.
With that being said, Marcus, how do you come back? Tell me. All right, cool. And we're back.
We just had like a hologram of Marcus.
Right. The best part, the listeners and viewers will never see this. DJ, quick hits. Hey, DJ, it's me. Number one, this comes from The Information. Netflix is seeking exit. Why can't I say this word? What is wrong?
Executive.
Say your word. It's okay.
I'm thinking whatever. Executive to lead in gaming efforts. Netflix is getting a gaming person. That's what's happening there. According to publication, over the past few weeks, Netflix has been looking to fill a video game executive role, nailed it, and has reached out to numerous people within the industry. The games Netflix produces are said to be ad-free and will operate similarly to Apple Online subscription offering Apple Arcade. Yeah, we'll see what happens there. I'm not super confident or about this. Number two, this comes from True Achievements. WB Games set to split after Discovery merger. So this is really big. A statement from a spokesperson for the deal. Some of the gaming arm will stay with AT&T and some will go to the new company. So this could, you know, Rocksteady Games is a part of that. Mm-hmm. The people who make Injustice.
Yeah.
You know, this could have far-reaching ramifications, so we'll see what happens there. Number three, this comes from Nintendo Life. Devolver Digital reported planning to go public with IPO at around $1 billion.
Pounds,
I'm sorry. Yes, pounds. So I personally think that this is a skit that they're going to do for E3. I don't think this is true. $1 billion sounds ridiculous for Devolver Digital.
You think it's smaller than that?
No, I think it's smaller than that. Like, for them to be valued at $1 billion, like, I don't know. I also don't play a lot of their games, so I also don't really know what their, you know, stable of games are. So
I mean, they like... It's funny, because in the book, they brought up Devolver Digital because they purposely always rent out space at a parking lot across from E3 as their showcase floor, so to speak. And so they just buy up small indie games,
right,
and publish them. And so, I mean, in this market, $1 billion, maybe a few years ago, that's a lot of money, but in the grand scheme of things, it's not that much. It's just a matter of hopefully they'll still be able to maintain their indie quality.
Okay. Yeah.
Interesting, but you're right. There's also a chance this is all just BS.
Right. We'll see, though. We'll see. I'll be surprised either way. Number four, this comes from VGC. PS5 is estimated to have doubled Xbox Series X/S sales during Q1 2021. This, according to research from data and analytics from Ampere analysis, which suggests Sony sold 2.83 million units to consumers during the first calendar quarter. According to Ampere, Xbox Series X/X consoles sold a combined total of 1.31 million units in the first quarter of 2021. You know, this is cool, but this is just, you know, all educated guess, so we don't exactly know the numbers until they say what the numbers are, and we know for a fact that Xbox will not. So
I think it's a nice way for them to digitally to show who has the bigger one.
Yeah. Number five, this goes from IGN. GTA 5 and GTA Online, PS5 and Xbox Series X upgrades coming in November. Actually, there is a there's a second part to this where you will get free access to GTA 5 or GTA Online for PlayStation 5 owners or something like that, I heard. I'll look into it later. Yeah, cool. GTA 5, again, still just same game, different generation. Cool. Number six, this comes from Pure Xbox. It's true. Xbox and Bethesda will host a joint E3 showcase. This is no surprise to really anyone. And the second part of this, which is no surprise to anyone, but surprise to everyone, is that Starfield will also be exclusive to Xbox Series X. For some reason, people thought that it was going to come to PS5 after Xbox or Microsoft dropped billions of dollars to get Bethesda. So sorry, whoever that broke their heart. Number seven, also from Pure Xbox. Outriders to expand after reaching 3.5 million players in the first month. I say good for them. I will eat crow because I was very much so just like, I don't know about this game. It played okay. It's, you know, a cool team game, but they've really done it. I think the Game Pass partnership really helped. But yeah, good for them. They got 3.5 million players. Cool.
Hey.
So that has been it for the quick hits, and now it is time for the heavy hitters. Douglas, take it away.
So this is a good summation of the final week of Trials and the great saga, which is Epic versus Apple. So one of the reporters, Dorothy Atkins, was live tweeting from the testimony of last Friday, which was the appearance of Tim Cook, the CEO of Apple. And so his whole purpose was to pretty much just say succinctly, what is Apple's position? And he only had two major jobs. One is Apple's in the App Store in particular. This is not a monopoly. And that charging that 30% commission is not an unfair business tactic. That's his sole purpose. And so during this testimony, which include questions from the court, he testified that, one, he's not a gamer, but he hears that they're very popular. He also believes that, no, you know, we're not a monopoly. We are competing with a whole bunch of other companies. He ragged off with Samsung, Google, Huawei, at least in the mobile phone market, but also competing with the consoles and Android. He said, look, we are trying to do one of the best products out here. We're so consumer-focused. We have people who, yes, they buy into our ecosystem, but by buying into the ecosystem, one of the things that people do is because we offer them a safe environment. Mm. We have drastically low levels of spam and viruses within the Apple network versus Android. Like, people come here for this expectation. And at 30%, he says, look, I know it makes a profit. I just don't know specifically how much of a profit it is. But I also know that we're spitting and we're making a lot of developer tools. Now, the court pushed back, says, aren't you saying that, you know, you charge 30% to everybody, but really the big driver of the money is games? So the folks who are spending all this money onto your, you know, formerly Fortnite, what have you, is really subsidizing the developer tools for all your other apps like Wells Fargo. Like, how does that make sense? And, you know, Cook's testimony is like, well, look, we provide a great product. This is an obligation that everybody has to pay. We treat everybody fairly. 30% is 30%. I don't know how much money I'm making, but it makes some money, but we're also spending money.
Wow.
So basically, it was a very calm place. There was no fireworks here in the testimony. And at the end of it, both cars rest their cases. Starting on Monday the 24th, we'll have closing arguments. And the judge pretty much says, look, I want to hear how whatever I rule is going to affect the changing market. Because she's like, I know this is an evolving market. It changed right now. I'm only seeing a snapshot. So tell me, how can I make a ruling in such a way that will have flexibility in the future?
That's interesting.
Yep. So, and she said that hopefully she might give a decision in August. Because there's a lot of testimony she took in. It's like a 3-week trial. But we'll see. Does Apple have to open up its mobile market? We'll see.
I feel like if they do, they're going to be begrudging as shit.
Oh, they're going to hate it. Or do they have to load at 30%?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So actually, quick question. Mm-hmm. Jordan and Douglas, do you both have iPhones or you got Androids?
I have Android.
Okay. I have an Android also. Well, I have my work phone's an iPhone, but I can't do anything with it except log in through my password, you know, the encryption shits through my
Gotcha. Yeah. And I got an iPhone. Huh. Okay.
So would you be happy to maybe have cheaper apps and to buy your apps from, you know, the app marketplace and have it download on your iPhone? Is that what you want?
I am so far removed from like downloading like just mobile games that I just haven't found anything that's interesting to me. So like this is just like, all right, cool, like you know, Apple do
rich people, is this rich people problems?
Yeah, exactly, that's what it is. Yes, I'm just over here trying to win in Knockout City, man. All right, the Overwatch 2 drop. So I will just, you know, I will head this one. So basically, there was a live stream where Overwatch 2, they showed the new lead game developer, right? Since Jeff Kaplan has left. And the biggest changes that they showed off was that the matches will be 5v5 versus 6v6. It was 6 before, right?
Yeah. Still is in Overwatch 1.
Yeah. And they're also thinking about how, because of that, they're thinking about how they're going to change the game, how they're changing supports specifically to, you know, work with the 5v5. Douglas, you have obviously way more experience in Overwatch than I do.
That's not an honor.
So what is your thoughts on the 5v5 versus 6v6?
It's a dramatic change. And it's going to take changes that really has to go not just with the character development, but also with the map design. Because as of right now, the maps are set up so that your tanks can work in pairs.
Right. Okay.
And now you're going to have everything solely reliant on just one tank. Now, we've had an experimental mode, we've had a 5v5 situation, and not many people liked it. Now, part may be because we're doing that on the current maps, and maybe with a different map and new abilities, we'll have a different feel for it.
Right.
We don't know, and even developers won't tell us when this game is going to come out for us to actually experience it. But for right now, at least for the members of my group, our PB and Overwatch group, hey guys, nobody's looking forward to this.
Really? Like, okay.
Well, because nobody, tanks is probably the most unpopular class of heroes to play. I mean, DPS queue lines would be like 10 minutes, healer maybe 4 or 5, but you want to play as a tank? Instant. They're dying for people to play tanks.
Yeah.
And nobody wants that.
Yeah, because actually that's one of the things that they mentioned in the stream was that, you know, now they're reducing it to just one tank, then, you know, hopefully the queues should be a lot quicker because you don't have to look for a second tank. Like, once you get the one tank, you're good. Interesting.
Yeah, and they're supposed to be, like, hyped up. Like, they're supposed to be more shields, more lives, I guess.
Yes.
It is, what people wondering was, how does a Roadhog Azaria work?
Right. So, we can actually talk about the abilities. So, during the live stream, they showed off a couple stuff. For example, Winston has he now has a charge shot to go along with his damage over time electric pulse thing. They showed, we knew before, but Reinhardt, he has 2 flame shots, and he can also steer his charge attack better. Zarya can now bubble herself twice or bubble someone twice.
That was something that we got a peek of last month. April 1st, like craziness, and come to find out, no, this is an Overwatch 2 ability. I did not like that.
Okay.
It took a lot more discipline.
Yeah.
And you need dedicated support, because Czar, you're vulnerable without your bubbles.
Yeah, you're right, right. Yeah, like I do remember, because I at a time when I was playing Overwatch, I did like Zarya, and I did find it kind of hard to play support because I was just getting like just crushed, and I'm like, I don't understand how this is supposed to work. But yeah, like they did mention that they would give reduced knockback to the supports, and then also you get less super from shooting supports, and I believe they get more super from. That second part, I don't know if that's true or not. Yeah, so like they are trying to add things in to make the supports more appealing. The other side to the ability stuff is they're taking away some abilities from other people. For example, Mei, her slowdown, she slowed down enemies, but she doesn't freeze them anymore. That hurt my soul because I love playing as Mei, and that was something that I relied on. But,
especially when you can like wave at them before you get my hit shot.
Right. But
I think they nerfed her already. So this is just like, yeah, because they nerfed her, so it took longer. Then they kind of like reverse a bit of it. Because people think Mei is the devil, and she kind of is.
But I guess the upside to that is that when you slow down enemies, you do more damage to them as you would before. And then they also talked about McCree losing his stun ability. Because the idea is to reduce the crowd control abilities of those, you know, set of characters. We also saw some new maps. So we have New York City, which is like a hybrid map. We had Monte Carlo, is the escort map. Rome is a push map. We're going to talk about that later on. And
Rio de Janeiro?
Janeiro. I realize that I say that wrong. Oh, okay. Cool. And that's a
welcome to Press X, learning how to enunciate.
Yeah.
That's right, kids.
I learn things every day. But yeah. So Jordan.
What's up?
You as the person who has not played Overwatch, what are your thoughts as you listen to this conversation? Does any of this sound like, maybe I'll try the number two?
I don't know. When it comes...
Well, Jordan, I take it that you like more like serious, and that's a better term for, but like Division. Is that your favorite class of games compared to Overwatch?
In terms of multiplayer games, I've been a big advocate of Battlefield, which isn't that like doesn't really have a true hero component. Like there are roles of Battlefield, like you have your recon, you have your assault, but it's not anything compared to this. And at a time I liked Apex, but I mean, yeah, you know, this is a number two in a style of game that wouldn't have a number two. It was like kind of expecting for a Fortnite 2 or expecting for an Apex 2. It's like this is kind of like the first two we're getting of a game of this style.
I wonder what your reception would be, because I feel like from what I know of the things you like when it comes to games, I feel like Overwatch might be a good fit for you, Jordan, because it is very role-based. I feel like the combat is as frenetic as Apex is. It's just Apex, you know, you might go a certain amount of time not doing combat because you're traversing the environment, whereas you know, Overwatch, you're like with your team. But I kind of feel like you might jive a bit with Overwatch more than you think.
Possibly. If there is a focus on teamwork, if there's a focus on a shared goal, then I'm for it, because those are the main game modes in Battlefield I truly enjoy. I mean, I like a good old-fashioned team deathmatch, don't get me wrong. But at the same time, if there's other pathways to success beyond killing the next person, I'm for it. So if they want to double down with that in Overwatch 2, then I'll give it an honest look.
Overwatch 2, there's supposed to be a lot more PvE matches as well. So that may be actually more akin to your interests. Now, we haven't seen a lot of what that looks like. Like the PvE modes that we have now, and those are like you going against like the AI, and usually there's like a story that you're involved in. That I think may draw you more, because there's a goal in play. Yeah, you are shooting your way through it, but you have the ball on your team. So oftentimes, like my favorite is Retribution, where your leads are Mora, McCree, Genji, and
Reaper, right? Or no?
Yes.
Yeah.
I would not say the full name that I like to call him, but Reaper.
What's the full name, Douglas? What's the full name? We got.
God, I call him Big Dick Reaper. Big Dick Reaper. So big guns. Anyway. You have to work together because you have one healer. Mm-hmm. You have your assorted DPSs, but especially when you go to more advanced game modes, you got to work together to take on a big boss, because one of those bosses may have like 1,000 life that you have to wear down, and often people would die as a result, but you still have at least one person still alive to keep the game going. Mm-hmm. I think that may fit more in line with your let's have a teamwork battle where we have a goal in mm-hmm. place.
Right.
That's not just shoot, just a shoot.
Right.
But you got to think it through.
Yeah. I'm actually excited for the PvE stuff, because for me, I enjoyed playing Overwatch. I had a fun time with it, but ultimately I stopped playing because I just feel like there was no visual progression.
Mm-mm. None whatsoever.
Yeah. So I feel like the PvE it would be a good bounce back where I can play that and progress in that. Because I believe in the PvE you can actually change the skills or something. There's some kind of progression that's happening there. Yeah.
And see, they alluded to this I don't think they talk about much in this gameplay, but in the mm-hmm. past they talk about how you can have multiple ultimates and different types of abilities.
Yeah.
There's so much they're promising with this game. Mm-hmm. And it's 5 years out since the last Overwatch, and it makes me very worried.
You should be. I'm worried about it too. I don't know when it's gonna come.
I'm feeling like I have a Anthem trauma of like grand promises, long time. You get the product, and you saw the promise. I had hope.
Well, hopefully they're in a better position than Anthem.
Yeah, but I still want to, and maybe that'll be in Jason Schreier's third book mm-hmm. about why did Jeff leave?
Ooh.
There's a story there, and you need to know. It can't be as simple as family.
I don't think it was. I think there was some shenanigans happening in the background. But speaking of shenanigans, the last thing to talk about with Overwatch 2 is the new game mode, Push. So Push is an Overwatch 2 game mode where players will clash to take control of a robot that starts at the center location and pushes towards the enemy's team base. So watching this was interesting. I have mixed... Actually, you know what, Douglas? What was your thought?
No, you go. You do your thoughts first.
I have mixed feelings on this only because it felt like it took a lot longer than I would... I at some point watching it was just like, oh, this is still going. And because I wasn't playing it, I didn't have any idea like, okay, are they almost done? Like, because mm-hmm. the robot will move to one side, and then when something happens, I think if all people, the supporting team wipes, the robot will go to the other side and start pushing for the other team. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. just the walk speed of the robot was just like, oh, this will take forever to get like back to square one and start pushing. So in my mind, I was like, maybe I just don't have the context to understand like the depth of this game, like what's going on. But for me, it was just kind of like, all right, I don't really know what's going on.
I mean, it's like a modification of like assault maps.
Okay.
Whereas assault map, you don't have to something you move, but you still have to have, everybody has to be at a single place. Kind of capture flag almost.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like a capture flag married with an assault point.
Gotcha.
Because you have to take control of a space and move that object towards your base, where a catch a flag is the flag, or an assault map, you're holding on to something, but it requires your team to be there.
Mm.
It just seemed like this is something that really needs time in the oven.
Yeah.
We're just seeing how the developers play it, and it seems interesting. I would not want to play this on competitive mode. This would be a great arcade game.
Yeah, that's
my
a good
friends.
Point.
And back to your earlier point about Overwatch and why you stopped playing. The only reason why I play Overwatch now is because of my friends.
Right.
We have a really core group of people that we play with from here to Canada.
Wow.
And this is like our daily hangout. Few of us even still play Overwatch. like Overwatch brought together. Most folks will only play Overwatch if there's a special event to collect the skins and bounce out.
Yeah.
Overwatch has that appeal. I do wonder, when it comes out, would it still be considered new and fresh?
That's a very good question because, you know, they're in a weird place where they have to provide a product that satiates the core base, but also, you know, revamp it enough to draw in people who didn't necessarily want to play Overwatch 1. Mm-hmm. And they're like, oh, this is something new, so mm-hmm. I'll jump on this. So yeah, they definitely have a lot of work ahead of themselves. I think overall, as a person who played Overwatch and was kind of like, all right, I had my fill. I really liked what they showed, and I am excited for Overwatch 2 whenever it comes mm-hmm. out.
But it didn't capture your love like Gundam.
No. Not many things will, but I understand and I accept that. I accept
But I mean, but I think most gamers have that game.
Exactly.
That they go to that you may have over 1,000 hours in this game, but it's reliable. It's like your go-to. I have nothing else to do but want to spend time. Here it is. Mm-hmm. Overwatch is that for me. Right. You got Gundam. Jordan, what is that game for you?
Forza Horizon 4.
I was going to guess that.
And so, now, I do wonder, why is Forza that way for you?
Because Forza is a game that is developed so well. It's a playground. I mean, it's literally a playground. Mm-hmm. You know, you're doing challenges, you're unlocking new cars, you're tuning cars, you're just drag racing against people. Mm-hmm. It still has a very lively community. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's a reason why it's like the top rated racing game of last console generation. I mean, it's just a very well made game. It's kind of hard to explain.
It speaks to your sensibilities as a gamer.
I mean, like, my core focus isn't racing, which is odd. You know, like it's mm-hmm. like I like shooters, like I like action adventure games, like strategy games. Like my core is not like there are those that are hardcore racing fans mm-hmm. that play That's Forza, true. But Forza is just such a well-made game that I just continually go back to it over and over again just to just drive around in like these amazing, beautiful cars.
Cool. I like that. I like that.
That seemed like less stress-inducing than Overwatch.
Yeah, you know.
See, Overwatch to me is like an abusive partner. You go there, get beat up, and you still go back to it. And you're like, why do I do this? Like, I always play, and I get angry. I'm like, why do I do this to myself?
Yeah, it sounds like Gundam for me. Yeah.
I will still never forget the story about how the guy, like, found a way to teabag you. I'm like, that took time and effort.
I hunted that guy down. I hunted him down. Yeah. And we'll find out what happens to him next time on Press X to Start Podcast. This has been another episode of Press X to Start Podcast. We hope you enjoyed the episode as much as we enjoy making it. Don't forget, our E3 coverage will be both video and audio. But in order for you to see the video portion, you're going to have to subscribe and hit the notification button on our YouTube channel, which is at pressxnumber2start.com/YouTube. In case you missed any of this, you can find all the details and more on our website at pressxnumber2start.com. With that being said, I think it is time for us to see you later. Next episode, we'll be having E3 predictions, so look for that. Peace.
Toodaloo.
Take care.